Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Allegra Chazdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, I want to speak about the horrific dangers that we saw in the trip to Israel by Barack Hussein Obama. We warned you. For 6 years, we warned everybody that Obama is a Muslim, he's a Jew hater, he wants to destroy Israel. And we see on this trip the terrible consequences of Obama's re-election to a second term. What did he do when he went to Israel? Immediately, on his very first trip in his second term, his very first trip as president, he starts pushing for Israeli national suicide. Right away, he makes a speech to self-hating left-wing Israeli students, and he calls for the creation of a so-called Palestine state, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, it's all an Arab lie and an Arab bluff. But he calls for the creation of a so-called Palestine state in the heartland of biblical Israel. If that happens, God forbid, Israel would go back to borders that are between 6 to 9 miles wide, the pre-1967 suicide borders. So that is a plan for Israeli national suicide. That's a blueprint for another Holocaust, God forbid. And that is what Obama is pushing for. And the Israeli left-wing self-hating news media was so enthusiastic and they supported his message. His speech, which these sick animal students applauded, and which so many sick self-hating Jews thought was a wonderful speech, in his speech he said that the land belongs to the Arabs, that the land of Israel belongs to the Arabs, that the Jews are occupation forces, that they're occupying what he called Palestinian land. Of course, there is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. And the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. But this filthy Muslim Jew-hating piece of dirt had the nerve to come to Israel and to say that the Jews don't have a right to their own country and their own land. And all the sick, self-hating Jews were applauding him. I mean, what a situation we have. And there are immediate consequences to the pressure that he is applying on Israel, him and that other animal, John Kerry, whose father was a Jew. John Kerry's father was a secret Jew who hid the fact that his name was really Cohen and changed it to Kerry and pretended he wasn't a Jew. And it eventually came out later, even though he hid that fact his whole life. And of course, intermarried and his son, John Kerry, what a self-hating piece of anti-Israel, anti-Semitic excrement. I don't know how else to describe them. And already, they're pressuring Israel, and the Israeli government already is giving in. According to the Israeli news media, Bibi Netanyahu, the so-called prime minister of Israel, has already agreed to a quiet freeze on Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem. A quiet freeze? In other words, he's not going to announce that he's freezing things, but in effect he is. Which has been his policy for years now. Under Obama, Netanyahu has agreed to, in effect, freeze Jewish building for years now. He officially did it for 10 months. He announced officially there's a complete freeze on all Jewish building for 10 months in 2009. Then he said the freeze comes to an end, but in reality, there still is a freeze where the government does everything possible to make it impossible for Jews to move to Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem, puts every obstacle in their way, and makes it easy for the Arab Muslim Nazis to build and to expand and to do whatever they want to do there. So he already, according to the Israeli media, has already agreed to what they call a quiet freeze on all Jewish building, which would be a catastrophe. That is very, very dangerous because we urgently have to move as many Jews into Judea, Samaria, and Eastern Jerusalem as possible in order to create create a situation where you can't establish a so-called Palestine state. And John Kerry and Barack Hussein Obama are demanding that Netanyahu release more Muslim terrorist mass murderers. Insane Israel has already released thousands upon thousands of Muslim terrorist mass murderers. For years now, the Israelis have been doing this. And Obama and Kerry have the chutzpah, have the unmitigated gall to tell Israel to release more Muslim terrorists as a gesture to the Muslim terrorists in Ramallah, to the Fatah PLO Muslim terrorists, so that they could restart what they call the peace process. Israel should be releasing more Muslim terrorists. This is what Kerry and Obama are demanding, while they refuse to release Jonathan Pollard, who is a hero to the United States and to Israel, and who's sitting in prison for 28 years now. They won't release Jonathan Pollard. And they won't release Robert Manning. In Hebrew, Robert Manning's name is Reuven Manning. They won't release him. He's sitting in a U.S. penitentiary in California, Robert Manning. They won't release them, but they're telling the Israeli government to release more Muslim Nazi terrorist mass murderers. And by the way, this again brings up the issue of how disgraceful it is that the Israeli government has released thousands of the most vicious Muslim Nazi beasts who slaughtered women, children, babies, and have sworn to exterminate every non-Muslim infidel. And Israel has released these beasts. But Israel won't release Jewish prisoners like Yigal Amir and Ami Popper, who acted in order to save the Jewish people. Jewish prisoners who did what they did in order to save Jewish lives and save the Jewish people, whether one agrees with what they did or not is irrelevant. Their intentions were to save Jews. They will never get released. They don't get released. They're never part of any deal for releasing. And of course, there shouldn't be any deals. The Jews should be released, and the Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists should be killed. They shouldn't be in prison. They shouldn't be released. They should be killed. And if we ever take power, we're going to kill them. We're going to execute the Muslim Nazi terrorists. But in any event, look at the insanity of the self-hating policies of the Israeli government. And also, Obama and Kerry are now saying, to avoid PLO Fatah complaints to The Hague and to the UN, so that the PLO and Fatah don't go to the UN against Israel and don't go to The Hague, the so-called international court in The Hague against Israel. In order to avoid that, Israel should give up more land. Can you imagine Israel's supposed to give up her land in order to avoid complaints being filed against her in The Hague? This is what Kerry and Obama are demanding of Israel, are pushing Israel to do. And finally, if this is not enough, no, they've also promised, Netanyahu also promised not to attack Iran. He gave Obama a promise that he's going to trust Obama on Iran. Trusting Obama, can you imagine how insane someone who is so obviously filled with hatred for the Jewish people, and this is who he trusts on an issue of survival, on an issue of life and death like Iran? And it ends with Netanyahu calling the leader of Muslim Nazi Turkey and apologizing to Turkey when Israel defended herself during the terrorist flotilla incident. Muslim Nazi Turkey sends flotillas full of terrorists to try to break the embargo, the sea embargo, on Gaza. Why is there a sea embargo on Gaza? Because Hamas, the Muslim Nazi terrorists who run Gaza, are smuggling weapons there to murder Jews, to murder Jewish men, women, and children. That's why there's an embargo. That's why there's a blockade of Gaza on the seas. And so Muslim Nazi Turkey tries to break that blockade and says, we agree with Hamas, and we agree with the terrorists. And this leader, Erdogan, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, this leader of Muslim Nazi Turkey, has said openly that Israel should be destroyed. He has said that Zionism and the existence of Israel is an injustice and has to be eliminated. He has called for the destruction of Israel. And Netanyahu calls up this Muslim Nazi pig in Turkey and apologizes to him while Obama's standing next to him. Obama told him, call him up and apologize. Netanyahu, like a good obedient servant of Obama, immediately calls the Turkish Muslim Nazi and apologizes to him. And now Israel is entering into discussions with Muslim Nazi Turkey on giving them financial compensation. Because in self-defense, some of the Jewish soldiers who boarded one of the flotillas that Turkey sent in a hostile way against Israel, in self-defense, some of the Jewish soldiers had to fire and had to kill some of the Turkish terrorists and the Muslim terrorists that were trying to infiltrate into Gaza. Now Israel is going to have to give financial compensation to the families of the Muslim terrorists and give financial compensation to Turkey for defending herself. Even the Jew-hating Nazi UN said Israel was acting in self-defense and said Israel was right in the flotilla incident. The UN, you can't get a group more anti-Semitic and more anti-Israel than the UN. And even they said in their report that Israel was acting in self-defense in the flotilla incident and that Israel was right. And Bibi has to call up this Turkish Muslim Nazi terrorist leader and apologize to him and offer him financial compensation and beg for his forgiveness because Israel doesn't lie down and die even more. Israel's already lying down and dying. They're already acting like cowards and already refusing to defend themselves. But because they didn't refuse to defend themselves even more, Israel has to apologize for that? I mean, this is unbelievable. These are some of the things that happened on Obama's trip to Israel. 2-day trip. And already, we have talk of freezing Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, freeing more Muslim Nazi terrorists, no freeing of Jonathan Pollard or Reuven Manning, giving up more Jewish land for nothing, for no reason, creating a so-called Palestine state and Israeli national suicide, apologizing to Muslim Nazi Turkey, and not acting militarily against Iran's nuclear bomb-making program as Iran marches toward developing nuclear bombs. All of this from a 2-day trip to Israel. Naturally, Obama is very encouraged because this is the only country in the world where he could do something like this. No one would ever give in and would ever do these insane things that Netanyahu and the insane self-hating Jews in Israel are doing. Now, you may ask, what about the Israeli people? A lot of average Israelis, a lot of them, do not agree with what Bibi's been doing and do not like Obama and are very nervous about this. There are Israelis that are very concerned about this. If only we were a mass movement. If only we were in the Knesset. If we had just one person even in the Knesset. If we had just one person in the Knesset out of 120 Knesset members. I'm telling you that we could change Jewish history. I'm telling you that if I were in the Knesset, we could change Jewish history. This would be a tremendous opportunity. We'd be filling a vacuum. We'd be speaking for huge numbers of Israeli Jews who are very concerned about this madness, very concerned, and who would love to hear a voice of common sense and sanity and Jewish honor and Jewish dignity. Anyway, this again just shows how urgent, how desperate the situation is that we get in the Knesset and that we become a mass movement. That is the answer. You're worried about Obama being reelected and all the terrible things that have happened and all the things we've been warning about. It's all coming true, God forbid. You should be worried. And the answer is the answer that we've said from the beginning. We've got to be a mass movement. We've got to have the ability to reach huge numbers of people. And the way for us to do that is if we get in the Knesset. Fellow JTFers, help us. Don't be apathetic and don't be indifferent and don't be inactive. Do things now to help us. Do things now to help us because these are urgent times and we all have to be involved as much as possible. Number one, when we put up Hebrew and English videos on the JTF forum, help us. Comment, favorite, like, mirror, share, do all the things that they do, all the crazy terms that they have on YouTube and on Facebook. Help us promote our videos in both English and in Hebrew. And even with the Hebrew videos, even if you don't speak Hebrew, you know how to help promote a video. That you know how to do. Your English comments on the Hebrew videos are fine. Help us with the Hebrew videos as well. Help us with the Hebrew and the English videos on both YouTube and Facebook. It's very important that we spread the word as much as possible. By the way, I just did 5 more Hebrew videos. You saw the first one of them that we released on the apology to Turkey. I put that thread up. It's a sticky thread. And I have 4 more waiting that we're going to be doing 4 more Hebrew videos. Plus, we have more English videos on the way. I mean, we're continuing to get the message out as much as possible. We're continuing to get the message out, but we need your help because we don't have a budget to promote and advertise and do the things that other people do. We don't have friends in the media that will publicize us. We have nothing except you, our fellow JTFers. So help us promote these videos. Also help us on the English forum and on our Facebook pages. Post interesting threads and posts and comments. Make interesting comments. Make the English Forum a place that's inviting for new people to want to join, new people who see and come and visit us all the time. And the same thing on the Facebook, on our Facebook pages. The more you post, the more things you put up there, the better our chance, the more you help us in terms of the Facebook search engine. So help us on both the English Forum and on the Facebook pages. And most importantly, as you know, our biggest problem is money. That was Rabbi Kahana's biggest problem. That's our biggest problem. That was the biggest problem during the Holocaust. The Jews who wanted to save the 6 million Jews during the Holocaust didn't have the financial resources necessary to make the necessary campaign that was needed to save the Jews, to force America to bomb the rail lines and bomb the death camps and take the other action that would have saved millions of Jewish lives. Lack of funds is our number one problem, and it has been our number one problem. It's a disgrace that all these rich Jews give to every evil cause under the sun. And, you know, that animal, Mike Bloomberg, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, just announced he's giving another $12 million for an anti-gun campaign against the Second Amendment. This guy is worth $20 billion. Look what he spends his money on, this evil animal, promoting gay marriage and destroying the Second Amendment and all the other evil things that Bloomberg has promoted. The animal from Facebook, Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg, that intermarried piece of subhuman filth, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. He's going to begin a campaign now to open America's borders to illegal immigrants. I mean, where are the sane Jews who help the one cause that could save the Jewish people? Where are the sane Jews? Except for you, our fellow JTFers, they don't exist. And the righteous Gentiles, we need the righteous Gentiles to help because it's the ultimate blessing to help Israel and the Jewish people. This is something we know from the Bible over and over again. We're warned about this in the Bible. And what happens to Israel affects the whole world profoundly. And so I want to thank those JTFers who have been helping us with their credit cards. They go to JTF.org, which is our English main page. There's a donate button on the top, or to Hayamin.org, the Hebrew main page. There's a donate button over there as well. And contribute generously with their credit cards on a regular basis. God bless the wonderful JTFers who've been doing this, who understand the importance of this and have been doing this. God bless you, your loved ones, and God bless you in this world and in the next. And equally important are the great JTFers who've helped us by sending checks and money orders and cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box. That's equally important. God bless you and your loved ones, both in this world and in the next. There is no cause that you could help that would be more important for the betterment of this world than JTF. And then Hayamin HaMiti in Israel, making Hayamin HaMiti a movement that will get into the Knesset, that will reach people. Because if we get into the Knesset in Israel, then we can have the attention of the entire nation in Israel. That will build a movement that will be something that can't be ignored. And it also, of course, will tremendously boost our movement in the United States, obviously. Because obviously, if we start making big waves in Israel, that's big news in America as well. So we're pushing for our dream of eventually getting into the Knesset, of becoming a mass movement. We need your help to do that. We need your help to do that. We have to try as hard as we can to reach as many people as we can, because the moment of truth is here. Obama is pressuring Israel to commit suicide. We're not allowed to be silent. We must do everything we can to stop this. Anyway, I thank the great JTFers who have been helping, but everybody's got to get involved and everybody's got to help as much as they can. Everybody's got to help as much as they can. The time is now. The challenge is now. We've got to make a difference. And maybe if God sees that we're all doing everything we can do, maybe in His infinite mercy, He will give us the power to reach the people and to make the change that has to be made and turn the tide before it's too late, God willing. All right. Now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, which, of course, as you know, I always love doing. Let me just make sure everything's okay over here. Yes, everything looks okay over here. And now we start off with the great Ruby Stars, who says, and I quote, "Every election cycle, the candidates get worse. Now we're potentially looking at Rand versus Hillary. How do we get better choices to pick from?" Unquote. Ruby Stars, you've been with us since 2007, I think at least 6 years, if I recall correctly. So you've seen us in two presidential election cycles. You saw how we tried the best we could to influence the 2008 election and the 2012 election. We tried to influence both the Republican presidential nominee. We tried to pick Republican presidential nominees that we thought would be better. And then once the nominee was already picked, we tried to stop Obama in the November election both times. We did everything we could. The problem, Ruby Stars, is that we're not big enough and strong enough and well-financed enough to change the results of a national election. That was the problem. If we could, we would have. Ruby Stars, you remember, we did hundreds of videos warning people. Now, our videos were very good. We had excellent videos with an excellent message, but we didn't have tens of millions of views on the videos, which is really what you need to move a national election. We had thousands of views and tens of thousands of views. And our video, for instance, the best anti-Obama video ever, that video has over 100,000 views. And we have other videos. We have another one with 80,000 views and 60,000 views. I mean, we have videos with substantial numbers of views. But to move an election where 120 million people are voting, we don't have enough strength to do that right now. We didn't have enough strength, and we still don't have enough strength. The answer is for us to become big enough and strong enough to make a difference. Ruby Stars, even if we're not big enough and strong enough, we have to try our best. And we did. And you saw how hard we tried. And by the way, Ruby Stars, I want to remind everybody. I said in 2008 that I thought Obama was going to win. That I didn't think McCain was going to be able to beat Obama. I thought Obama was going to beat Hillary Clinton for the Democrat nomination. When everybody was saying Hillary Clinton was going to win, I said, no, I think Obama's going to win. And I made it clear that I thought, in the November election, I thought Obama was going to beat McCain. Despite the fact that I thought the odds were against us, I said we have to fight as hard as we can and try as hard as we can, which we did. But I wasn't surprised by the results. I knew this was coming. And in 2012, you remember, over and over again I said, the odds are against us. This is an uphill battle. The news media and Hollywood and the really powerful people in this country are supporting Obama. So the odds are against us being able to win in a situation like this, and the demographics and the fact that Republicans are always on the defensive. I said all along that I think the odds are against us. But still, I said we have to try our best, and we did. Now I'm making a prediction for 2016, and I'm sorry to say that once again, I think it does not look good. In 2016, I believe that Hillary Clinton will probably be elected president. I think that the odds are in her favor. Do we have to try to defeat her? Yes. Do we have to try to influence things? Yes. Do we have to try to stop the left-wing, illegal alien-supporting, drug-supporting Rand Paul from winning the Republican nomination? Of course we have to try to stop Rand Paul from winning the Republican nomination, and we're going to try. We're going to try our best. I don't know if Rand Paul is going to get the Republican nomination. That I don't know. But I do think Hillary Clinton is going to win the election. I think she's going to be elected president unless something surprising happens. We have to try to make surprising things happen. We have to do everything we can, even when the odds are against us, even when it's an uphill battle, even when it's David versus Goliath, we have to always try. And God willing, I'm hoping that we'll catch a break and that we'll become a big movement and that we'll be able to make the big difference that we have to make. But right now, Ruby Stars, I agree with you. Things are going downhill in the United States very fast. And unless there's a mass movement that's uncompromising and tells the truth and has the type of message that we have, we're in a lot of trouble. So let's hope, Ruby Stars, let's hope that somehow we can catch a break, become a big movement, that we can get elected to the Knesset. If that happens, who knows? Who knows what type of influence we could have on the process? Anyway, thank you, Ruby Stars. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, Barack Hussein Osama is going to have another Passover in the White House. This is insulting to my faith and heritage, unquote. Of course, Chicago Jew, you're 100% correct. Absolutely. It's a complete insult. And of course, the self-hating Jews that participate, you know, and that are part of this farce, they're the real disgrace. I mean, Obama, look, Obama's a Muslim Jew hater. He's a black Muslim who's jealous of the Jews and jealous of white people. And he represents that jealousy and that lie that blacks are really better than white. That not only the lie that black culture, you know, not only denying the obvious, which is that black culture is grossly inferior to traditional American culture, but he actually goes further. He and Hollywood and the media are perpetrating the lie that blacks are superior to whites. And of course, then comes the anti-Semitism. This is an administration and a president who are viciously anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. And for them to celebrate Passover would be, I mean, it's unbelievable. This is like Haman celebrating Purim, or it's like Pharaoh celebrating Passover. I mean, it's absurd. He's trying to destroy the Jewish people. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the fantastic Waiting for the Mother Plane to Come, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you believe there is a conspiracy by neo-pagans to infiltrate churches and other traditional conservative institutions, unquote? You know that I'm not generally into conspiracy stuff. But I do believe that there are individuals who deliberately set out to take over institutions that are conservative and institutions that involve that want to preserve traditional moral values. That I do believe exists. Look at they're not neo-pagans, but they're communists. The National Council of Churches, and that's part of the World Council of Churches, these are communists. I mean, these are Marxists. And they have huge churches with huge budgets, and they're Marxists, they're extreme leftists. And they claim to be Christians and claim to be, and then they fight to destroy Israel and fight for gay rights, so-called gay rights, and fight for illegal aliens and fight for every left-wing cause under the sun. These are communists. These aren't Christians. These are communists. And, you know, and now we see even in the so-called evangelical movement, we see so-called pastors that come up and that are preaching a message of saying, well, we shouldn't be involved in politics anymore, and we're not interested in discussing this anymore, because we have, you know, we have congregants that are offended if we take a political stand. Now, these are cowards. They're cowards, and they're stooges of the establishment. They want the media and the establishment to like them. They don't want controversy. And so they're backing away from the moral obligation of every righteous person to stand for what is right. Every moral person must try to make this a better world. Every moral person, Jew and Gentile, must work for moral values. And they are trying to stop that. Is that a conspiracy? Whether you want to call it a conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, it's happening. And there are neo-pagans, and there are communists, and there are New Age people, and there are all types of crazy people. And they're moving in, even into evangelical churches now. And so, you know, it's a situation in which, unless we have people who can answer firmly and strongly, we're in a slide downward. Unless we finally have people who will answer strongly and effectively and in an uncompromising way. Anyway, thank you, Waiting for the Mother Plane. And now we go to Eli Yitzchaki, who is our great member both on the Hebrew and the English forums. Eli writes, and I quote, what do you think about the election of Jorge Mario Bergoglio, who is now Francis the First as Pope? Do you think he'd do better than Joseph Ratzinger, unquote? I have no idea, Eli, what he's going to do. I have no idea. The church right now has a policy on Israel that is terrible. They've been hostile to Israel. And they have a policy on other issues also, which I have major problems with, left-wing policies, left-wing positions. on all types of issues. Is this new Pope going to be better? I don't know. I honestly don't know if there's going to be any real difference. Anyway, thank you, Eli. And now we go to our good friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Rabbi Shai Piron, the new education minister? Is he a real rabbi? If so, why is he in the Ein Atid party?" Unquote. Okay, first of all, in my book, he's certainly not a real rabbi. He's number two on the list, and Binyamin writes here, Ein Atid. The name in Hebrew of the party is Yesh Atid, which means there is a future. But Binyamin correctly renames the party Ein Atid, there is no future, because with that party, there is no future. He's running on a party that is anti-religious, that's anti-Torah, with the anti-Semite Yair Lapid. Yair Lapid is the head of that party. And he calls himself a rabbi, and he's number two on the list of this party. And he was deliberately made number two on the list, on the party list, because Yair Lapid wanted to prove that he's not really against the Torah, not really anti-religious. Baloney! His party supports gay marriage in Israel, God forbid. His party supports every left-wing horrible cause that would destroy the Jewish homeland. And this is a so-called rabbi, and he's running on a party list, supporting giving up Jewish land, creating a so-called Palestine state, committing national suicide, supporting so-called gay marriage. This is a rabbi? You got to be kidding me. Of course he's not a real rabbi. Anyway, thank you, Binyamin. Thank you for bringing that up. And now we go to the Great Pyramid Head fan, who writes, and I quote, "Is Hugo Chavez enjoying where it's hot all year round and summer never ends?" Unquote. Well, there's no question he's in a place where it's hot. And you know, Pyramid Head fan, in the Jewish faith, we don't know if there's actually a physical burning hell or if there's spiritual torment, which can be worse than physical torment. We don't know exactly how the wicked are punished. We don't know exactly what happens. But we do know for sure that they are punished and that there is justice. That we know for sure. There is something called Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. Every person faces that when they die and when they go before God. And there's no question that the wicked face punishment. And Hugo Chavez was the ultimate example of an evil, monstrous individual. And he certainly is being severely punished and will be severely punished. Will be severely punished forever. Anyway, thank you, Pyramid Head fan. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, what should the retirement age be?" Unquote. I think the retirement age should be 70. I think people are living long enough and healthy enough that we can make the retirement age 70. Of course, if someone's sick, some consideration, if someone's really, really sick and in bad health, there has to be some consideration for that. If they can't work, they can't work. But as long as someone's in good health, I think 70 is a good retirement age. And more realistic in this day and age when people are living until their 80s. Tag Mechir now writes, "Shiur for Pesach, please." Okay, Tag Mechir wants a discussion of Chag HaPesach, the Passover holiday. Let's see, what aspect of Pesach, of the Passover holiday, should we discuss? Okay, let's discuss, you know what? Let's discuss how the Jews had to leave behind evil Egyptian culture. Because the Jews were in Egypt as slaves for 86 years. They were actually living in Egypt for 210 years, but they were only enslaved for the last 86 years. And so for 210 years, they're living in Egypt and influenced by Egyptian evil culture. And then 86 years, they're slaves. So that's had a tremendous impact on how they think, on everything about them. And the Jews were told, you've got to get rid of that evil Egyptian culture. Those aspects of Egyptian culture that are evil, you've got to get that out of your system. You've got to get rid of that. And so one of the first things they were told to do is slaughter the Passover lamb. God said before the final plague, the 10th plague, where he killed all the firstborn of Egypt, he said, slaughter the Passover lamb and put the blood of the lamb on your doorposts, and then I'll fly over your house when I'm going to kill all of the Egyptian firstborn, and your firstborn won't be touched. So the Jews were ordered to kill, the word for lamb in Hebrew is seh, they were ordered to kill the lamb of Egypt, haseh. Now why was this so significant? Because the lamb was the god of Egypt. In other words, in front of all their Egyptian neighbors and all their Egyptian bosses and their Egyptian masters who they were slaves to, now these slaves, these Hebrew slaves, are taking the god of Egypt and slaughtering him. And they were ordered to slaughter, to publicly do this, to do this openly, so that their neighbors and the Egyptians would see it. They had to slaughter this lamb and then eat it. Slaughter the lamb and eat the lamb. So this was showing not only the Egyptians, but also showing the Hebrews themselves, that the gods of Egypt have no power, that the only God with any power is the God of Israel. And then the Hebrews had to disconnect themselves also. This also helped them to disconnect, not only showing that the Egyptian God has no power, but also this was intended to disconnect them from idolatry and from all evil Egyptian culture. Now, why do we eat matzot? Matzot is the unleavened bread. Well, there are a number of reasons why. One is that the Jews had to leave Egypt quickly, so they didn't have time to leaven the bread. It says in the Torah, the actual word in the Torah is bechipazon, which means very quickly. In a hurried way, they had to leave, bechipazon. It also says, and we're also taught by the rabbis, that unleavened bread represents freedom. Bnei Chorin, free people, eat matzah, eat unleavened bread. Why? Because it takes less time to make. When something takes a long time to make, you're enslaved to it in a way. You're tied to it. But when something takes less time to make, when it's easy, because making matzah is much easier than making bread, because it's unleavened. So when something takes a lot less time, this is freedom. Something that you don't have to spend a lot of time on means that you are free. And so it's a symbol, matzah is also a symbol of freedom. And also, the matzah, the unleavened bread, represents humility and modesty. This was something where the Jews were told, you shouldn't live in the prideful, arrogant ways of Egypt. The pride and the arrogance and the ego that the Egyptians live by. You're not supposed to live like that. You're supposed to be modest and humble. And matzah, because it's not like bread, because it's not leavened and it doesn't rise and it's flat, it's not like bread. Matzah represents modesty and humility. But there's another reason, aside from all of these reasons that we mentioned, that it's good for humility, that it's going away from Egyptian pride, that it represents freedom, that the Jews were in a hurry, bechipazon, they had to leave Egypt. Aside from all that, there's one other reason that is not often mentioned. Who invented chametz? Who invented the leavening of bread? The Egyptians. They're the ones that came up with this innovation. Ancient Egypt were the first people to come up with bread and with leavening of bread. The Egyptians were the ones that created this innovation. And so eating unleavened bread was another way to disconnect from Egyptian culture and to reject evil Egyptian culture. The Jews, if they would eat the bread, they would be reminded of Egypt and evil Egyptian culture. Here they had to disconnect from evil Egyptian culture. The lesson, we have to reject evil culture, and we have to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. We have to create a new culture and a new way for the world to go by, a way based on morals and truth and godliness and faith and righteousness and justice. And the evil man-made cultures that we're used to, that we're accustomed to, we have to reject them. That's one of the great lessons of Pesach, of Passover. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go to someone new on the forum. Welcome to the forum, Kozmaniak. I don't know if I'm saying it right. I'm sort of trying to say it in the Hebrew way, but anyway, it could be Kozmaniak. But if you're trying to make it Hebrewized, it would be Kozmaniak. Anyway, Cause Maniac writes, and I quote, "I live in Manhattan. I wonder if you have any meetings I could attend. I am a supporter of Rav Kahana," unquote. Well, no, we don't have any meetings in Manhattan. And in order to attend our meetings, which we have elsewhere, we have to get to know you, and you have to be with us and be involved with us for a while before we invite people to our meetings, because our meetings are really for veteran JTF members and activists. But no, unfortunately, we don't have any meetings in Manhattan. But again, if you get to know us and become very active with us, then we'll be happy to invite you to meetings that we have elsewhere. Anyway, thanks for the question. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of NOM, the National Organization for Marriage, both in terms of their goals and effectiveness?" Unquote. Well, obviously, if they're fighting against so-called gay marriage, obviously I'm happy to see that there's a group fighting against that. I've seen their spokesman on television. I've heard them on the radio and radio talk shows, and I think they're too, you know, as you would expect, E.B., coming from Chaim ben Pesach, you know that I think they're too defensive, and I don't think they hit hard enough. I think they're too defensive. I think they're too defensive. I think somebody has to stand up and say that the gay lifestyle is not normal, that God calls it an abomination, and that this is a way to death. This is a path of death. And that we have to urge people and tell people that this is something that is not a normal part of society and that will be good for society. They don't want to say that. They're concerned about using that type of language. And I think that takes away from their effectiveness. Of course, I hope they succeed in preventing the Supreme Court from ruling in favor of so-called gay marriage and whatever they're doing in the state legislative level, on the state level. Of course, I hope they succeed. But I think they'd be much more effective if they would honestly tell the truth, what they themselves believe. They agree with what I just said, but they're afraid to say it. I think somebody has to stand up and say it. Anyway, thank you, EB. And now we go to our good friend Mansch, who writes, and I quote, "Wall Street Journal published Don't Free Jonathan Pollard by Stevens, allegations, compulsive liar and braggart, fond of cocaine, accepted payment for spying," unquote. Oh, this is such a vicious, disgusting campaign against Pollard. I mean, what an evil pig this is. This is a kike. This is a real kike who is ashamed to be Jewish. And I know, you know, I know some people don't like when I use that word, but I don't know how else to describe someone who is so afraid of anti-Semitism that he'll sell out his fellow Jew who's rotting in prison for 28 years. It's just, it's disgusting beyond all words. And then make up all types of, repeat all the smears, all the anti-Semitic smears. You know, and this animal, by the way, you know, whom you're referring to here, I mean, he's a self-hating Jew, and what he writes is evil. We have to do everything we can to free Jonathan Pollard. And we have to do everything we can to free any Jew who tried to save the Jewish people and help the Jewish people. And in this case, Jonathan Pollard, by the way, Jonathan Pollard, what he was doing was not only good for Israel and the Jewish people, was also good for America. Anyway, thank you, Mansch. And now we go to our good friend Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "According to FBI agent John Guandolo, the new CIA director John Brennan is an Islamic convert. If true, what are the implications?" Unquote. The implications are horrific, are terrible. But I think we have a Muslim convert in the White House. I think we have an Islamic convert. He isn't a convert. He was actually born a Muslim because his father, his biological father, Barack Hussein Obama's biological father, was a Muslim, and his adoptive father. So I think we have a Muslim president. So, you know, we have Muslims taking over the United States government. And the implications are devastating. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous situation. Anyway, thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to our great friend, Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "What do you make of Obama's heckler when he gave a speech in Israel? One news source said it was for Pollard's release and another pro-Palestinian," unquote. Well, first of all, it was an Arab Muslim Nazi. I mean, I saw him interviewed in Israel. So it was an Arab Muslim Nazi who heckled Obama. And what an embarrassment, what a disgrace that not a single Jew was willing to get up and heckle Obama in that audience. An Arab actually got up and heckled him. I mean, he's defending the Arabs and supports the Arabs. And an Arab got up and heckled him. What a disgrace. And his whole speech was, you have to identify with the so-called Palestinians and put yourself in their place, and this is their land, and you're a foreign army occupying their land. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, Obama's speech was so anti-Semitic and so viciously anti-Israel, and the Jewish students there, a lot of the Jewish students there were cheering and applauding. Some of them weren't. I saw some of them just sat quietly in their seats, but they shouldn't have sat quietly. They should have gotten up and heckled. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And if we ever become a mass movement, God willing, Obama will never get away with what he got away with this week in Israel. Never. If we're a mass movement, you would see big demonstrations against him, and you'd see us burning him in effigy, and you'd see me in the Knesset calling him a Muslim Jew hater and denouncing him. It'd be a whole different ballgame if we were in the Knesset and if we were a mass movement. God willing, that day should only come. And now we go to the fantastic spiraling leopard who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, my court case is planned for next Wednesday. Please give a yimach shmo v'zichro to Ali El-Jari, who is the one who pressed charges, unquote. Absolutely, yimach shmo v'zichro to Ali El-Jari. First of all, I know, spiraling leopard, that you're a law-abiding citizen, and it's Ali El-Jari who should be facing charges, not you. I mean, there's no question in my mind that he's the one who should be facing charges. Spiraling Leopard, we should be praying for Spiraling Leopard to succeed in his court case on Wednesday, that Hashem, that God, should exonerate Spiraling Leopard of all the charges, and Ali El-Hari should die of cancer. Yimach shmo v'zichro. Spiraling Leopard, you're in our prayers. And let us know, by the way, let us know what happens. And now we go to the great JTFer Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, please give yimach shmo to Jan Giulu, Swedish novelist and former communist who calls for the destruction of Israel and supports Al-Qaeda. He was also a KGB agent, unquote. Oh, yes. Yeah, he's the guy, I think, that was paid by the KGB. I think he was actually paid. I think the KGB actually paid him. And he admitted that he was in contact with the KGB. He admitted that he was involved with the KGB I think he denies he was an agent, but he admitted that he had contact with them. What did he have contact with them for? To discuss the weather in Sweden? I mean, of course, he was a member of the Swedish Communist Party, and he has openly called for the destruction of Israel. Yes. Yimach shmo v'zichro. Thank you, Say No to Islam. And now, I can't say this word. I can't say your name because you know that this is an obscene saying in Arabic. I understand your sentiments. You're saying blank to Arabs, and you're saying something in Arabic. I don't use obscene language, so I can't repeat. I can't even refer to you by your name if you're going to have this name, even though, again, I understand your sentiments. Anyway, this person blank to Arabs, let's call it blank to Arabs, and he's using a term in Arabic to curse at the Arabs. Blank to Arabs writes, and I quote, what do you think of the Bronfman family, unquote? Oh, the Bronfman family is one of the most horrific, self-hating Jewish families that you could ever find. They're all intermarried billionaires, all self-hating scum. Edgar Bronfman Sr. supported the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat in the 1970s. In the 1970s, when everyone was against Arafat and everyone was against the PLO, Edgar Bronfman Sr. was supporting the PLO and supporting Arafat and supporting Israeli national suicide even in the 70s. And of course, Bronfman's son, Edgar Bronfman Jr., who, by the way, halachically is not Jewish, because Edgar Bronfman Sr. Edgar Bronfman Sr., by the way, married, I think, 3 or 4 times. Every single wife that he married was not Jewish. Married outside the Jewish faith every time. And he finally had a son, Edgar Bronfman Jr., Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who used all his money and his fame and his fortune to marry a black woman. And he promotes Jew-hating rap. He promotes Jew-hating anti-white rap and rap noise of the worst type that promotes violence and drugs and all the evils. He promotes all of that. And of course, you know, guy was married to a black woman, so he loves that culture. Just a disgusting, hideous family. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram. Anyway, thank you very much. Blank to Arabs. And now we go to the great Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, could I get your interpretation of the past week's Haftarah? Thank you, unquote. Yes, of course. Haftarah, by the way, is the portion of the prophets of the Nevi'im that we read every week after we read the Parashat HaShavua. Parashat HaShavua is the weekly Torah portion. Parashat HaShavua this week was Parashat Tzav, which is the second parasha in Vayikra. And the Haftarah this week that we read is from Malachi Gimel. Malachi Gimel speaks in the... I'm saying this from memory, I don't have it in front of me. But Malachi Gimel here urges the Jews to correct their moral values and to correct the wrongs that they've done. And basically it's tochecha. Tochecha means he's lecturing the Jewish people on the immoral things that they've done and that have led to punishment of the Jewish people. Malachi is the last prophet. So it's the end of prophecy for the Jewish people. The era of prophecy ends with Malachi, and the long night of exile begins. So it's a very important period for the Jewish people. Prophecy ends, and we're going now into a long period of exile, where we're not going to have prophets anymore, where we're not going to have direct connection and to God anymore, and where we're going to be scattered among the nations of the world, a hated, persecuted, murdered minority, until we eventually return to our homeland at the end of days, which is something that happened 65 years ago. So Malachi is speaking to us at a very critical time, at a very critical juncture in Jewish history, and telling the Jews the way that we could make the exile a lot shorter and a lot less painful, and how we could change things for the better if only we finally return to God and do what God commands us to do. That's this week's Haftarah. Anyway, thank you, Ephraim. And now we go to our friend Super Zionist, who writes, and I quote, what do you make of the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party's pledge to annihilate all Muslims in Europe, unquote? Well, obviously, I don't believe anything that neo-Nazis say. They're anti-Semitic animals, and their main goal is to destroy the Jews, and any pledge they make in terms of Muslims is a lie, because the Muslims and the Nazis were always allies. And so even if they try to appeal to popular concern in Europe about the Muslims, about the Muslim takeover of Europe, the reality is that the Nazis always collaborated with the Muslims in the end, because the goal of the Nazis is not to save Europe or to save any other country. The goal of the Nazis is to destroy the Jewish people. They are obsessed with hatred for the Jewish people. And they know that the Muslims are trying to do that in the Middle East, and so they support the Muslims no matter what they say for propaganda purposes. Thank you, Super Zionist. To Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what should governments do when banks go bankrupt and need a bailout, which puts the government in debt, unquote? Well, the government goes deeper in debt when the government has to bail out the banks. Banks should be allowed to go bankrupt, and companies that don't do things right, they should be allowed to go bankrupt. And I know that it's painful, and I know that there is pain, and there's short-term pain associated with that, but in the long term, if we had a free market approach, when big corporations and banks do wrong, and allowed them to face the consequences of their actions, in the long term, it would be better. We need the free market to straighten these things out, and we should not have taxpayers bailing out corporations and banks that do wrong things. Of course, the FDIC insured accounts, that's something that's a different story. That's something which depositors have been promised, so the government has to honor that. But the bank itself, aside from protecting the depositors according to the terms of the FDIC insurance, aside from that, the bank itself has no right to expect taxpayer protection and bailouts, and should not expect it and should not get it. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we have a question from the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of disco music, and what do you think about Bruce Springsteen? Thanks and God bless," unquote. Well, as you can probably imagine, I don't like most disco music. There may be some exceptions, but generally speaking, I don't like disco music. I don't like it. I didn't like it in the 70s when I was a kid. I mean, disco music reached its peak when I was a teenager. And I didn't like it then. And I just think it's a decadent type of so-called music, and I don't think that it's on the same level in terms of quality music that we could have in modern society. As far as Bruce Springsteen is concerned, number one, I don't like his music. I never thought it was such great music to begin with. And number two, he's a leftist, and I can't stand his leftist politics and his support for Barack Hussein Obama and other leftist causes. I absolutely can't stand him. Anyway, thank you very much, Confederate Kahanist, and God bless you. And I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another show that I very much enjoy doing. And I wish all of our great JTFers, our Jewish JTFers, I wish a Chag Pesach Sameach, a very happy Passover holiday. And God willing, may this holiday of freedom and hope and opportunity be the beginning for us to finally turn the tide and make a change for the good of the world. May somehow our break come, and may we all work together to achieve that glorious goal. Until next week, Shalom.